One thing I've learned after all these years, you're gonna save yourself a whole lot of tears. Don't try to figure out who was wrong and who was right. Got to move along, baby. Let's ride. You got to roll with the punches. Well, you got to go with the flow.
Hey everybody, Mike Houlihan here, your old pal. Thanks so much for listening to Hibernian Radio. Another week under lockdown. I'm getting pretty sick of it, but I think I see a light at the end of the tunnel. A lot of great stuff this week. We've got a 35-year retired Chicago homicide detective, Dave O'Callaghan. He's going to tell us about his book, Murder Is My Life. Also want to remind everybody, next week we have a very special surprise. You'll find out when you listen to the show. But right now, let's listen to Dave O'Callaghan. He's got some terrific stories, and he's a terrific guy. And you got to get his book, Murder Is My Life, is the name of his book. I read it. It's terrific. Go to murderismylife.com. Buy the book. You get it on Amazon. You can get it at Bookie's bookstore, too. But if you buy the book at murderismylife.com, he splits the profits with Gold Star families. Well, that's a good thing, right? So get the book. So here he is, Dave O'Callaghan.
In continuing our focus on Irish first responders and their modern-day equivalents as the Irish mythological warriors in our midst, we got a great guest tonight. A cop's cap, as they say. He's the real deal. He has a book, Murder Is My Life, retired Chicago homicide detective, Dave O'Callaghan. Dave, welcome to the show, pal.
Thank you.
I read your book. It's dynamite. You've had how long were you a cop? A long time.
Yeah, I did 35 years, a little over 35 years.
Yeah. And where'd you grow up? What neighborhood were you growing up in?
Initially, I grew up in, as we speak, in Chicago, St. Brennan's,
yeah.
66th and May in Englewood, and
yeah.
then Sacred Heart after that at 70th and May.
And your dad was from Ireland?
My dad was from Cork City.
Yeah, okay. Well, you're the perfect quintessential Chicago cop. We have some mutual friends that you worked with, my old pal Richie Kulovitz and Danny Brannigan. But I want to take you back. There's so much ground you cover in the book. First you were a patrolman, and then you became a detective, and then a lieutenant, and you went through the whole gamut there. But I guess the big crux was the investigation of the El Rukins. Is that correct?
That took quite a few years of my life, yep.
And they were basically an organized crime unit, a syndicate.
Right. They were initially known as the Black Stone
Rangers. I
remember.
I went to Mount Carmel High School. They were right there.
63rd Street.
Right in our neighborhood. That's when they were the Black Stone Rangers. And somehow they got political, and they found out a way to get bigger and make more money, and they turned themselves into the El Rukins. So how did you get involved in that investigation?
Well, I was a homicide guy in Area 1.
Where's Area 1?
Area 1 was 51st and Wentworth, but it covered the whole, from downtown to far south, and then east of the Ryan to the lake.
Yeah.
So I handled a lot of homicides, and the El Rukins committed quite a few homicides.
They killed a lot of people.
They sure did.
Yeah.
They sure did.
And you were seeing a pattern here as a detective. Same guys all the time. Yeah.
I would get them quite a bit, but the Pat Deedy and another U.S. attorney, shouldn't forget
Patrick
her name.
Pat Deedy, I've met him. Good guy.
They had charged and tried the El Rukins for a case in which they got a Laws rocket to commit terrorism acts and try to blow an airplane out.
Holy cow.
And also to blow up your friend from Mount Carmel, Danny Brannigan.
Oh, really?
They wanted to blow him up
sure,
with a law.
Because he was hot on their trail.
Right.
Yeah.
So I got recruited to do the homicides in that federal case, and a guy by the name of Bill Hogan,
oh,
who's
sure.
still there,
yeah.
he did the prosecution along with about five or six other U.S. attorneys, Ted Pula, Silverman, Pace,
yeah.
the whole crew.
And over the years, you developed your own unique, when you're questioning a guy, interrogation tactics, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Tell us about that. What's,
contrary to popular opinion, most people think the only way you get a guy to confess to a murder is to beat the hell out of him.
Yeah.
So, my two things, I think, are the two most personal things in life.
Yeah.
And one is eating with somebody or drinking with somebody.
Oh, yeah, I read that in the book, yeah.
Right? So,
yeah.
I would make sure I bought chicken or pizza, and then I treat them decent. So, my joke is chicken and kindness.
Yeah,
and
get
the other
talk. Yeah.
And the other thing is, a guy said he had to go to the washroom, even though he was trying to get out from under the interrogation. I take him to the washroom, and more often than not, at the urinals, they would say, "Hey, I've been lying to you all day, man."
No kidding.
And they'd say, "Well, when we get back after this pee, I'm going to tell you the truth."
Really? So, yeah. They felt vulnerable, probably.
Yeah, I don't know what it was, but it's kind of like treat them with a little courtesy and they give it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, so most people want to confess.
Yeah.
I have a little bet I usually do with people, and I could prove it to you right now. I usually lay a $100 bill out, and I tell anybody anywhere, if you think of something in your mind that you did that was immoral and wrong that you never told anybody, not counting a priest, but anybody, a guy at the bar, a woman at the bar, the bartender that you did in life, I'll give you that $100 if you could tell me that. So nobody comes up with an answer.
Sure, they don't want to.
Yeah, right, yeah. I don't think very few people hold it. You know, so
I got a lot of stories to tell you, but I don't want $100 that bad.
Yeah.
That's a good bit. Yeah.
That's good.
Well, everybody's got some, their MacGuffin or whatever. The main thing about the book is it was murder, though. It's not just robbery or stealing a car. It's murder, man. These are bad, bad dudes.
Right. For every murder a month that I handled, I would get 28 separate ones. Not dead, shootings. That's times 40, 50 detectives just in Area 1 alone back in those days. So we usually average about a murder a day at least.
You ever get depressed in a situation like that? Or, it's got to take its toll.
Well, you don't have time to do that.
Yeah.
But there are cases like baby killers.
Oh, my God.
Or real innocent people. Like I can think of the Chinese doctor visiting here, walking down 22nd Street. He gets murdered for his money. I used to call it pruning the tree of life. One dope dealer kills another dope dealer.
Pruning the tree of life.
Yeah, or, they occasion themselves to be killed, gang and drug dealing. But when you see somebody who just going along to have a good time and not bother anybody and then they get killed, that kind of bothers
tragedy.
You a bit. Right?
Now, tell me about Sherman.
Right.
One of the sources that you developed over the years.
So I'll tell you the lead up to the story.
Okay.
I used Detective Eddie Day, brand new detective, came into the unit. So I was assigned to Eddie to help him learn to be a detective. So
sure.
Eddie got what we call the paper job, just a punch in the face type thing. He wants to make an arrest, so I'm telling Eddie, no way, man. We ain't got time for this. I got a whole load of murders here. But I went out with Eddie to get this guy Sherman. Eddie had done his background. And when we got up to this apartment, Sherman jumps off the couch and punches me right in the puss.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So the battle was on.
Yeah.
We took Sherman down, brought him into the station.
So you guys wrestled him down and cuffed him and everything. Yeah.
But my face was still hurting. He's a pretty tough guy. So when we get in the station, he wants to cut a deal, and then he gives us a murder for hire. Where a guy named William D. had tried to hire him to kill his 16-year-old son.
Wow.
For an insurance policy. So
this guy took an insurance policy on his son. He was going to whack him just to get the money.
Correct.
What a piece of crap.
Correct. So Sherman gets on the phone. Sure enough, it comes to fruition. So at the time, Rich Daly was Jr. was the
state's attorney.
State's attorney. Yeah. And so we got warrants and we put a wire on him. And he went out and he went into this guy's business on 73rd and Stoney. And the conversation moved along. So me and Joe Murphy were in a van and we could hear, and this is a kind of a comic little thing there, we could hear Sherman being shown a gun and the insurance policy and telling him, look, you kill my son, you're going to get $5,000 or $10,000, whatever the contract was for. So
you guys are in the van listening to this, yeah.
Correct. So all of a sudden, this guy, William, he says to Sherman, I got to search you. Well, Sherman's got a wire thing, not like they have today.
Oh, yeah.
But a big, huge
like a camcorder.
Yeah. On his side. It was a tape recorder. So I thought, man, that's it. So it was a terrible night. So here's me and Murphy running down the alley. Figure we're going to get in a shootout with this guy as he tries to kill Sherman once he finds the recording device. And what happens is Sherman then calls him a f***. And he tells him, man.
Hey, don't turn your hands on me, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Sherman's pretty smart. Yeah.
Sherman was real smart, streetwise.
Yeah.
So right as we're going to round the corner, the guy backs off and says, hey, man, I'm a man. I ain't never had another man, blah, 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 and all this stuff. So Sherman then comes out.
You guys are waiting.
But we pick him up, and we backed off, and it would have blown the case a bit.
Yeah.
But then we were able to get search warrants, arrest warrants, and we eventually locked that guy up. So Sherman.
And saved his son's life at the same time.
Yeah, well, the kid was a good kid.
Yeah.
The father was a jerk and an auto thief and everything, but the kid was 16, great high school student, and wanted to get out of the ghetto.
Yeah.
You know, that type of kid. Yeah. But Sherman then, he went to jail for a little while, but when he came out, he became an informant. And I was running down alleys with him, and we got shot at together.
Wow.
And he's just a stand-up guy. And,
didn't you tell me a story, actually, it was in the book. You bought Sherman some clothes was it for court or something? Or?
Yeah, no, not for court. I bought clothes for another guy for court. But Sherman, I got him a job working at McCormick Place through a friend of mine that owned it. So Sherman, I'd get him part-time jobs here and there. Plus, he made money doing undercover work.
Yeah.
So he made $300. So I brought him his check. We cashed it. And then he calls me up. So I go over to his house. He lived around 44th and Wabash, and I go over there, and he steps out in like this loud orange or green jumpsuit. So I look, I go, oh man, where'd you get that? He goes, I bought it with my paycheck.
Proud.
Yeah, I go, hey, you were supposed to buy food for
your kids. Yeah.
He goes, them kids are always going to be hungry. They're always going to eat that food up. This suit is going to be with me forever.
Oh, wow.
So after that, Murphy gave me a huge bad time. So I went back and seen Sherman, and Joe had told me, you know.
Joe Murphy, your partner.
Yeah, you really made him feel bad. So I ended up taking him and his four kids and his wife down to Chinatown and giving them money to, you think I took them to the Taj Mahal for dinner, but I had that guy for years. He was a tremendous asset, just a tremendous asset.
God
bless
Sherman.
Plus, he was a good guy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's dead now. But
now, there's another story in the book. And, folks, you got to get this book. It's just terrific. And if you love cop stories, it's the best. The name of the book is Murder Is My Life. What's the website?
Murderismylife.com.
Murderismylife.com. You can get it online.
And Amazon also.
Yeah, but with each sale, Dave is donating $3 to be split between Gold Star families and the Wounded Warrior Project. I think that's terrific.
That's great.
So go through him. I mean, you can get it on Amazon, but go through murderismylife.com, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Or at Bookie's Bookstore.
Oh, yeah, Bookie's on Western Avenue.
103rd and Western, yeah.
Okay, so there's a guy who married a woman who was an Irish immigrant, Bridget, and this is the Wineshank murder.
Right.
And tell us about that, because it was such an unfortunate thing that happened right. to this guy, and well, he became friendly with his family. And
right. Charles Wineshank, he actually worked for some electrical company, and he was a part-time marionette police officer.
Marionette Park.
Right.
Yeah.
So what happened is that he came down off of Canal and Wacker, and they were testing some electrical equipment to see how hot it could get before it caused a problem, and they had to do it at night. So on his way back, about 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, he goes into the parking garage at 10 South Canal, and as he goes up there, he didn't carry his gun.
Yeah.
You know, and he could have, but he just didn't carry his gun. So he gets lit upon by two guys from the west side of Chicago, and they figure that this guy's going to be an easy mark.
Mm-hmm.
Although they had an argument among each other that the one guy thought, why don't we leave that guy alone and let's wait for a nice little old lady who
yeah.
we can really beat up
yeah.
and she won't fight us too
bad. Bags.
So the problem with this hit is that Wineshank wasn't going to give it up.
Fought back.
He fought back. He almost took care of both of them, and then they stabbed him to death.
Oh, wow.
So
right there in the parking garage, huh?
Yeah. So there was a load of detectives who worked on that case.
Yeah.
And Jack Markham and Michael Connor were key in there, and there was a couple other guys who found evidence and stuff. So end up finding a phone number in a jacket that had been discarded, and that phone number led us to a guy on the south side. Then they went out and interviewed people on the west side who this guy said he had been on the L train with, and that's how any investigation.
Oh, that was his alibi. Yeah.
Yeah, keeps folding out. So this Wesley Robinson and another guy were picked up. And brought in, and then I got involved.
And they were the guys who killed Wineshank. Yeah.
They killed Wineshank downtown. So Wesley Robinson, I end up getting a confession off of him. And ironically, he had killed another guy, but pled out to just manslaughter and did a small amount of time.
Oh, yeah.
Then he killed Wineshank, still didn't get the death penalty. And then while he was in prison, he killed a guy from Cambodia who was a worker in the prison.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So he's in there now for the Wineshank homicide and then killing the third guy, and he still didn't get the death penalty. But there is no death penalty anymore, thanks to Governor Ryan. But with this, so when I was writing this book, I went to my sister's down in Florida, and I was playing with the computer, and I decided not only her, but a bunch of other victims I was going to try and find.
Mrs. Wineshank.
Yeah. So I started playing with the name, and I've come across Bridget. I didn't know her first name.
Yeah.
So I ran it. I got a hit. I call up this lady, and I said, look, I'm from Chicago, explain everything. And then she goes, oh, yeah, sure. I'll meet you. Yeah, I'm Charles Widow, you know. So
and you heard the brogue.
She goes, yeah, and I'm not good with a brogue.
Yeah,
so
but
don't
you heard it in her voice, yeah.
Right, so I said, well, ma'am, when I get back to Chicago, I'll look you up. She goes, oh, I'm not in Chicago. I'm down in Florida.
Oh, no kidding. She's right there.
She was 1 hour away from my sister's house. So I went there.
Yeah.
I interviewed her for hours.
Yeah.
She broke my heart.
Oh, yeah. It is a heartbreaking story.
Yeah, yeah. So, and then now I've met her three daughters. I met Deborah, Cindy, and I apologize. I forgot the third thing. And I met the grandson, Danny, who never got to meet his grandfather because these rats murdered his grandfather. And they then told me their heartbreaking stories about how they missed their father, because when he was murdered, one was like 16 or 17, another was 14.
And they tell the story about the night he didn't come home, and they're all... It just shows you the ripple effects of all of that stuff and how heartbreaking it all is. And oh, it's just awful.
Right.
And you went and tracked all those people down.
Yeah, they were very in there. When I did... at Bookies, I did a talk.
Yeah.
And they all came. And so
They really?
They all came, and they're a great family, great family. So in the talk, I pointed to my wife's girlfriends, and I said, this is what life is about.
Yeah.
Your family and your friends who've been friends with her since we were kids.
Yeah.
And then I pointed to the back of the room, and I said, and this is what victims look like.
Oh, wow.
Whether they're the actual victim or the, as you say, the victims of the victim.
Yeah, a generation of victims. Yeah.
Right. So, and they're just the nicest family in the world. So,
Oh, God bless them.
Yes.
Well, I was really impressed with that you went to the trouble of finding these people and meeting them, getting to know them.
Right.
And on top of all that, tell me a little bit more about the Ulrukans, because that was a RICO thing, racketeering.
Right.
Yeah.
So
federal thing.
Right. So what happens with the Ulrukans is that, well, there was several task forces in a row. In the 80s, the Ulrukans went crazy with killing.
Yeah.
See. In the old days, they would go up, they would run up behind a guy and then, bum, 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 shoot him in the back of the head.
Yeah.
And they got their target. But then they started getting sloppy. So I think it was...
These are hits that they were hired to make, right?
Yeah. No, they were making them because they were protecting their territory,
the
and drug territory.
Yeah, yeah.
So probably one of the tipping points was within a week or two in May of 1985 or 4... They started shooting like crazy. And one of the bad ones, it was Area 3 homicide case, not mine, but they shot three people coming out of a store at 54th and Halsted.
Yeah.
None of them had nothing to do
with
the Ulrukans. So that one became...
Just innocent people.
Innocent, victims. Wrong victims.
Yeah, wrong place, wrong time. Yeah.
Right, so it was a task force with, like you mentioned, Brannigan and Kolvitz, Tommy O'Brien, federal agents. We were all sent to the Cook County State's Attorney's Office. And I had been there before for a triple homicide. I worked with a group called the Royal Family.
Oh, that's another thing I was going to ask you about, yeah.
Yeah, so...
We'll get to that.
Anyway, we had an informant who came in. His name is Anthony Sumner. He's dead now, too. But
so you can give us his name now, Anthony Sumner.
Yeah. So Anthony got caught up, and he started spouting. Now, I didn't even know he was in because it was going to be a big secret. So I picked up the double homicide. It's a key part of this book. And other guys picked up a couple other murders, and then we ran like hell before they figured out that Anthony Sumner is not being seen on the street and knew that he's the one giving up information.
Oh, yeah.
So you got to work day
in.
Is
that how they figure it out? They go, hey, where's he been?
Yeah.
He's talking to the cappers. Yeah.
Right. And what they'll do then is go to the family, threaten the family.
Oh, yeah.
You better find Anthony and tell him we're going to kill all of you.
Yeah.
You know, that was their game plan through threats and intimidation. So... we did a load over in the state's attorney's office. About six or seven different attorneys were involved, federal agents, Area 1 homicide guys, Area 2. Everybody got involved. And what that evolved into is later The federal government had cases open. Like I said, that Laws Rocket case. And
where the El Rukins bought a rocket to
To shoot an airplane out. They got $1 million from Gaddafi.
Holy cow.
Yeah, so...
See, you think of these guys as just street jerks, but no, they were pretty sophisticated, I guess.
And they made a load of dough, load of dough. So, and amazing to me, if you talk to one of them who cut dope, he could tell you how to break a bag of dope down, how to cut it this way, how to cut it that way, how to cut it. It's like a chemistry major, and how much snap it off the top of his head, how much money they would make by cutting down an ounce, and go there. But
wasted talent.
Yeah. So in 1986, I made sergeant. And I went to the 6th District, Gresham.
South side of Chicago, my old neighborhood.
Right? Yeah. So what happens after that is that I went to the federal task force, and was Bill Hogan, Ted Pools, Pace, all of those guys, and Ross Silverman. They were putting together a RICO program. So we had bought guns, drugs, murder investigations, shooting investigations, and we put together enough to indict 104, but they were like, whoa, we're not going to fill the federal courts with all these. So we took the top 64.
Wow.
And actually the U.S. Attorney's Office, in conjunction with the judges, honed it down to 64, and we had like 5 trials going at the same time. And it was quite a big splash. It RICO and CCE, Continuing Criminal Enterprise. And
CCE, Continuing Criminal Enterprise.
Right. Yeah. So those federal cases were used to do the prosecutions, and then murders and narcotics dealings, and young federal agents stepped up, Danny Young, Tom Murphy, and Mitch Weedo, and Timmy Wilson. And they went out and made undercover buys with informants, bought guns, bought drugs, and those counts became and did surveillance work. So it was a great team effort, and we shared information with DEA, and the IRS stepped in. And then South Carolina got involved because they had a murder down there that fit into the El Rukins a hit.
Yeah.
And it took about 4 years, but you know, most of these guys are now getting out, and some of them died in prison. Right.
What is your take on the situation now? There's a terrible anti-cop culture.
Correct.
Fueled by the media. What the heck's going on?
Well, here's how the game is played.
Yeah.
First of all, they're willing participants. With the media, like say they're suing the cops. I got sued myself. So, and I got sued a couple of times. And just about
There are some lawyers, that's their specialty.
Correct.
Cop-hating lawyers, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So what they do is... they'll plant stories. They have their favorite reporters.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So they'll do it on TV and in the paper. So by the time it comes in there, if you read these stories continually and continually, the public thinks every homicide guy...
I think it's all on the square.
Yeah. ...was brutal.
Yeah.
And everything that's in the newspaper is the truth. So now by the time you get in, there's an assumption or presumption, of guilt, that the police did something, or they call themselves the Innocence Project, or one of these,
which turned out to be all BS too, as
right,
I recall.
Right. Yeah. But they'll look for a technicality, and then they bring you in the federal court, and then it's a dog and pony show that they run, and you're hammered. I'm still going through it from 2010 on.
It's terrible. Listen, can you come back another day and tell us some more stories? This is great stuff. Wow. I do want to get to the royal family story when you come back, because that's great. There's a gang, the royal family. Is that?
I know the royal family
okay.
well.
Yep. At first, I thought you were talking about like Prince Albert. He's a crook too. Pedophile, I think. Anyway,
Andrew.
Oh, is it Andrew? What's the other guy? Oh, Albert. Anyway, Dave O'Callaghan, get the book. Murder Is My Life, David O'Callaghan. You can get it at Bookies on Western Avenue. You can get it at Amazon. But better yet, get it at murderismylife.com.
Right.
Because when you do that, part of the purchase price goes back to the Gold Star Families and the Wounded Warriors Project. Dave, thanks so much for coming. You got to come back. Thank you for your service. You're a wealth of information. So thanks, pal.
All right.
And we'll see you next time. Thank you. God bless you.
Hooli, I should call you, right? Hooli.
Call me Hooli. We're going to take a little break here on Hibernian Radio. We'll be right back after these messages from our friends.
If you or a loved one is injured, you need someone to represent you. But don't just call a lawyer. Call a judge. Former supervising judge James McGing. Jim McGing represents injured people and their families in cases involving personal injury, wrongful death, workers' compensation, and third-party lawsuits. Jim represents first responders, and he formerly worked for the General Counsel of the Illinois Fraternal Order of Police. He was an assistant state's attorney, and he was legal counsel to the Cook County Sheriff. As a judge, he presided over multi-million dollar medical negligence, traffic, premises liability, and construction injury cases. He wrote the Illinois court decisions regarding injured police and fire for on-the-job injuries and during training exercises. So don't just call a lawyer, call a judge. Former Judge Jim McGing of the Miller & McGing Law Firm, 33 years of personal injury and workers' compensation experience. You can get a hold of Jim at 773-467-8000. That's 773-467-8000. Give him a call. He's an old pal.
There's only one Irish pub in the Chicago River, and that's Lizzie McNeil's at 400 North McClure Court. We spend a lot of time there, taping the Hibernian Radio Show at Lizzie McNeil's every Wednesday night. You can escape the hustle and bustle of Navy Pier and relax at Lizzie McNeil's. Our old pal John Wren is your host. Please say hello when you stop by for one of their ice-cold brews in an authentic Irish pub. One visit and you'll be calling it your hometown hangout. We've been hanging at Lizzie's for going on 10 years now, so join us. When the weather gets nice, they have two outdoor patio areas where you can take advantage of the sunshine and a cafe menu of salads, sandwiches, and appetizers. Lizzie's also has a great private party room that's perfect for birthdays, graduations, and most nights at Lizzie's you can meet the elite of Chicago's Irish-American community. So stop by Lizzie McNeil soon, right by the river, and tell them you were sent by your old pal, Hooli. Thanks.
McCann's Irish Oatmeal. We've been warming the hearts, minds, and souls of the most discriminating oatmeal lovers for over 150 years. From the family farm to your table, enjoy the whole grain goodness of McCann's Irish Oatmeal today. Available at your local grocery store.
You know, Billy, whenever I walk down Old Western Avenue, I'm in the old neighborhood, and I'm looking at the window of Ken's or Wrong's or Hart's or any of those great saloons, and I see the ghost of my old pal Jimmy Goff through the mist, and he says to me, "Hey, Hooli, who died?" A lot of deaths this week. And you know, this is the only show where you get fresh obits every week. Fresh obits, because we have the greatest obit scout in the world, Mr. PGOD, and his lovely wife Mary. Hi, PJ. So here they are. Jane Grace, born in Chicago. She was the youngest of five children, born to Irish immigrants John and Bridget O'Leary. Jane O'Leary Fleck Grace. At Chimes, she had a great family and her kids. She survived in her family of origin by her siblings, Marie, Catherine, Teresa, and John Jr., as well as many cousins and nephews, and her three children, Jonathan, Eileen, and Matthew. She's also survived by her only two grandchildren, Wava and Jackson. And finally, Jane is survived in spirit by other amateur artists. God rest her soul, Jane Grace. Catherine Kennedy. Catherine Kennedy D. Her last name is D. D-E-E. Catherine Kennedy D. From County Kerry. She leaves behind her devoted husband of nearly 59 years, Edmund J.D., and two children, Mary and Michael. She's nearly 97 years in her life. God bless her. She was happiest when surrounded by friends and family, enjoying lively conversation late into the night. Well, me too. Music and dancing always brought her delight, and she never met an animal that didn't immediately fall in love with her. Her Catholic faith provided her with great comfort, especially in her final years. God rest her soul, 97 years, Catherine Kennedy D. Vincent Joseph Lynch, 80. Vincent will be forever remembered by his children, Patrick and Kelly Lynch, and his brother, Father Miles Lynch, stepson Mark Bromley, daughter-in-law Elizabeth Lynch and Jill, and grandchildren Shannon, Lily, Reese, Ryan, Marie, and Jordan. He graduated from Quigley in 1958. He's a member of the 1965 class of St. Mary of the Lake Seminary. He went on to work with Cook County Assessor Tom Hines, an old pal of mine. Then on to the law firm of Rock and Fusco. Well, that's Phil Rock's old firm, specializing in real estate taxation. Vincent was a founding member and first president of the San Diego St. Patrick's Day Parade and Grand Marshal in 2000. And in 1983, he was the Friendly Sons of St. Patrick Irishman of the Year. God rest his soul, Vincent Joseph Lynch. Michael Collins, there's a fine name. Age 67, devoted father of Sean, Megan, Shannon, Aaron, Megan, and Caitlin. Cherished brother of Ray Collins. Ray Collins, I know Ray Collins. I wonder if it's the same guy. Anyway, he was waked, or, well, his funeral arrangements were taken care of by Sheehy's, where all the right people go. So say a prayer for Michael Collins. Also, William O'Neill, 88, of Pinecrest Manor in Pennsylvania. He is survived by his son, Bob O'Neill, and daughter, Colleen Schimmel. God rest his soul, William J. O'Neill, 88. William P. McKeever, Dr. William P. McKeever, 96 years old, of Glenview. After a long illness, Bill, or Willie, as he was known in Ireland, was born in Dublin. He attended Belvedere College and received his M.D. from the University College Dublin in 1947, graduating in first place. While in Chicago, he met his beloved wife, Joni, on a blind date. They were married for 66 years, when she passed away just last March. He was drafted in the U.S. Army and served as a cardiologist at Walter Reed Medical Center. He was a professor of medicine at Northwestern University. An amazing guy. Loving father of Diane, Ellen, and Michael. God rest his soul. Dr. William P. McKeever. Who else have I got? Oh, here's one somebody might know. Leo Close, 82. He was the brother of Father Mike Close, or Father Jim Close, from Mercy Home, and the judge, Judge Mike Close. Leo was born in Chicago. He married Mary Ann Ruby, settling in Des Plaines, where together they raised their five children. Leo was an electrician by trade. He began his career working at the Merchandise Mart in Chicago, as well as the Chicago Stadium, which led to his lifelong love for the Blackhawks. He went on to spend over 25 years as head of building operations for Mercy Home for Boys and Girls, until his retirement in 1995. As the son of two Irish immigrants, was proud of his heritage and often flew both American and Irish flags outside his home in honor of his Irish roots. Despite his adventures, Leo was happiest with a cocktail in one hand and a cigar in the other, holding court with his family. I like that. Leo is preceded in death by his parents and his brothers Bill, Honorable Michael, well, that's the judge, Reverend James, and Sister Sheila. He is survived by his five children, Kathleen, Anne, Kelly, Jim, and Mary. God rest his soul, Leo Close, and our condolences to Father Close and to Judge Jim Mike Close. Okay, Bridget McGuane, 80, native of Belmullet, County Mayo, Ireland. Beloved wife of the late Martin J. McGuane, loving mother of the late Susan, Mary Pat, Deirdre, Sheila, Gerard. She's a member of the Irish American Heritage Center and Shamrock American Club. Bridget had a strong faith and devotion to the Blessed Mother. She had a special kindness about her and was adored by all who knew her. God rest her soul, Bridget McGuane. Etna Curtis Nolan of Chicago, formerly of Dublin, Ireland, passed away from complications due to COVID-19. She was the beloved wife of James, loving mother of James P., mother Martha M., and Patrick S. God rest her lovely soul, Etna Curtis Nolan. And finally, I got to tell you, you know, this is a very Irish thing we do on the show. We're proud of it. Actually, I ran into Alice Lang, the mother of Jeff Lang, just the other day, and she said how much she enjoys the show, and it reminds her of the old Irish hour, so we're proud of that. That's a great compliment. But if you like obits, you got to read Maureen O'Donnell in the Sun-Times. She's probably the best obit writer in the nation, I'm saying. And this week, she just had a terrific obit for Meg Rooney, a beloved Chicago school counselor, Sox Park worker, who died at a pretty young age of 57. Meg will be laid to rest next to her husband at Holy Sepulchre Cemetery under a headstone engraved, "What a Wonderful World." It was their song. She was married to John Rooney, former reporter for the Daily Law Bulletin, and a guy I knew too as well. Just a terrific obit. You got to read it. Her death came less than 4 years after her husband, John Rooney, longtime reporter for Chicago Daily Law Bulletin, of Lou Gehrig's disease. There's a picture. She met John at a bar on the north side and raised her kids on the south side. She worked at Kellogg School for years, 17 years, as an elementary school teacher and a counselor for the kids. The kids loved her. If you were a child, this is the principal talking now. If you were a child coming to school and you're having a bad day and you're upset, they'd say, "Can I go see Mrs. Rooney?" The kids loved her. They knew if somebody's real or fake, and you didn't get any realer than Meg Rooney. God rest her soul. That's a great obit. And I wish I'd have met her. She worked at Sox Park for a long time, 17 years, as a greeter and helped people. And just a, you know, and you got to give Maureen O'Donnell so much credit because she really captures the life in a simple newspaper story. And so anytime I see an obit by Maureen O'Donnell, I know it's going to be a good one. So let's close up the crypt and see where we're at and take a little break here. Oh, before I say that, don't forget Mullins applesauce. It's like apple pie without the crust. And it's made by our old pal Jim Mullins. So if you see that in your Jewel or any other place you're picking up your applesauce, your groceries, make sure you get yourself some Mullins applesauce. It goes for good cause, and it's delicious. Okay, now we're going to take a little break on Hibernian Radio. We'll be right back after these messages from our friends. Okay, hey, everybody, thanks so much for listening. You know, our production assistant, Sarah Hand, came up with another caption contest this week, and it was a great one because she found an old picture of me on this show called Politics Tonight. I think it was on CLTV when my book came out a couple of years ago. There's a picture of me sitting there with that guy Paul Lesnick, who is the host of the show, and kind of a, you know, a normal situation of me being on a TV show, and people came up with some very funny captions. The runner-up was Jeff Lang, of course, and I can't really say his caption on the air. It involved the name Pritzker and lots of F words. So, Jeff Lang, you don't win anything for your, but we salute you for your obscene caption. But the actual winner of the caption was Mike Miller, retired fire chief Mike Miller, old pal who has been to Ireland with me many times. And Mike's caption, now you got to envision this, I'm sitting on a stool and Paul Lesnick is on a stool and we're both sitting there and I'm wearing my sport coat and khaki pants and I said, "Paul, I don't feel comfortable. I think I wore the wrong pants to this interview because I have a feeling I'm going to have a code brown any minute now." That's Mike Miller's caption. And if anybody knows what code brown, it's the chief, Chief Mike Miller. Okay. So Mike picked this song, Kathy McGuire singing Our Lady of Knock, in St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City from a couple of years ago. It's on YouTube, actually. You hear it now, but if you want to go see Kathy singing the song, she's just gorgeous. But there's a great moment in the video where she's singing Our Lady of Knock, and they cut to Cardinal Tim Dolan, obviously the Cardinal of New York City, and he's singing along with her. He's sitting in his chair singing Golden Rule. It's just a riot. And he's a terrific guy. I've been every Sunday, because I can't go to Mass, I've been tuning into his live Mass every Sunday at 10:15 New York time from St. Patrick's Cathedral. The guy is fantastic. Well, of course, because he's an Irishman. Cardinal Tim Dolan. So check him out in the video as well. Here it is, by Mike Miller's request, Kathy McGuire singing Our Lady of Knock.
There were people thank you.
with a history going all the way back to 1896, the International Union of Operating Engineers has continued to protect workers and their families with loyalty and brotherhood. Local 150 has continued to thrive through economic booms and busts with careful training and aggressive organizing. Under the leadership of President and Business Manager Jim Sweeney, Local 150 has implemented programs and action plans to create work, protect benefits, and keep members working. And they've been helping the Irish-American community of Chicagoland for just as long. The Hibernian Radio Show is proud to be associated with Jim Sweeney and Local 150, and we salute the continuing efforts of the International Union of Operating Engineers and their support of Irish and Irish-American families now and in the future. Thanks to Local 150.
If you or a loved one is injured, you need someone to represent you. But don't just call a lawyer, call a judge. Former supervising judge James McGing. Jim McGing represents injured people and their families in cases involving personal injury, wrongful death, workers' compensation, and third-party lawsuits. Jim represents first responders, and he formerly worked for the General Counsel of the Illinois Fraternal Order of Police. He was an assistant state's attorney, and he was legal counsel to the Cook County Sheriff. As a judge, he presided over multi-million dollar medical negligence, traffic, premises liability, and construction injury cases. He wrote the Illinois court decisions regarding injured police and fire for on-the-job injuries and during training exercises. So don't just call a lawyer, call a judge. Former Judge Jim McGing of the Miller & McGing Law Firm, 33 years of personal injury and workers' compensation experience. You can get a hold of Jim at 773-467-8000. That's 773-467-8000. Give him a call. He's an old pal.
McCann's Irish Oatmeal. We've been warming the hearts, minds, and souls of the most discriminating oatmeal lovers for over 150 years. From the family farm to your table, enjoy the whole grain goodness of McCann's Irish Oatmeal today. Available at your local grocery store.
When your family has suffered a loss, there's one family I know who will be there for you. Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Homes are third generation, family owned and operated. The Sheehy family has dedicated their lives serving families throughout Chicago and the southwest suburbs. The Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Home was incorporated in 1913 as a storefront at 76th and Halsted in Chicago. At the time, this was one of the few standalone funeral homes of its kind and was to be the first of many to come bearing the Sheehy name. The founder, Roger Sheehy Sr., was soon joined in business by his three sons, Roger Jr., Jack, and Bob. This trademark of service is evident 98 years later, as Bob and Jim Sheehy, third generation, own and operate two locations in Orland Park and Burbank. At Sheehy's, the name on their sign outside the funeral home means something. For them, it's very important that everyone be treated as if they were family, friend, or neighbor, as they very well could be. When my brother Willie died a few years ago, the Sheehy's took very good care of our family. And you know, you never forget something like that. Their entire staff cares about each and every family they serve. Every detail is handled in a professional and personal manner. On a daily basis, the directors Bill Kiley, Mike LaRock, and John Sullivan, and the rest of the staff take great pride in their work, serving families as if they were their own. Bob Sheehy will tell you, we pride ourselves on offering the highest level of professionalism with every family we serve. Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Homes, here for you since 1913.
Deep, deep in deep, the south deep, side of Chicago.
Get me out of here.
So deep, deep. All deep. The way up to 93rd Street.
Get me out of here, please.
Across the tracks where they only spoke Yaki Dak.
Oh.
And the people barely survived on a strict diet of crunchy bones and bad food.
Hey, man, you want another drink?
Yes.
Can I get you two?
This yeah. is almost 70 years we're talking.
70
when
years?
The mix what? On his teeth.
Oh.
Something entered his cranium.
His cranium?
And wormed around his frontal lobes and took him to a state of mind.
Mind.
Hidden place on the other side of bunkers.
Welcome.
A crazy, silly, screwy.
Have a seat.
Known as Hoolytown. Welcome to Hoolytown. Don't stay too long, though.
How come?
Because you might not come back. Welcome to Hoolytown.
Why, thank you.
And you're welcome.
Oh, it's so great to be back in Hoolytown. And I want to remind everybody, next week, the whole show is from Hoolytown. But here in Hoolytown, things are a little bit different, as you all well know. So I want to tell you a little story about a man. He got in a car accident, and unfortunately, it completely ripped off his penis. The doctor says, "Sir, we're going to rebuild your organ from scratch. Now, the way we do this with your operation is to charge you $1,000 for every inch in length. We rebuild we did John Wayne Bobbitt, so you know it's going to be good. Your insurance company has given you $12,000, and that's yours to keep. So maybe you want to use all of it for 12 inches, or maybe only $5,000 or even $4,000. The man says, "Well, let me talk it over with my wife." He goes, "All right, tomorrow I'll call you, and I want to know what you want to do." And the next day, the doctor calls him and says, "So, how long are we going to make your penis?" And the man says, "We've decided to go with the granite countertops in the kitchen." Skinny told me that joke, so you can blame him. One more joke. For several years, a man was having an affair with an Italian woman. One night, she confided to him that she was pregnant. Not wanting to ruin his marriage, he said he would pay her a large sum of money if she would go to Italy to secretly have the child. If she stayed in Italy to raise the child, he would also provide child support until the kid turned 18. She agreed, but asked how he would know when the baby was born. To keep it discreet, he told her to simply mail him a postcard and write "spaghetti" on the back. He would then arrange for the child support to begin. One day, about 9 months later, he came home to his confused wife. "Honey," she said, "you received a very strange postcard today." Oh, just give that to me. I'll explain it later," he said. The wife watched as her husband read the card, turned white, and fainted. On the card was written, "Spaghetti, spaghetti, spaghetti. 2 with meatballs, 1 without. Send extra sauce." Okay, everybody, this has been another edition of Hibernian Radio. Thanks so much for listening. Remember, next week's going to be wild. We're broadcasting from Hoolytown, Radio Theater of the Mind. Thanks so much for listening. God bless you all. Hope we'll be out of this soon. And we continue to salute our Irish first responders, cops, firefighters, and paramedics. And God bless you all. We'll see you later. Bye.
I wondered, yes, I wondered, oh Lord, I wondered, will I look down the road, and I wondered, just to see how far I was from God. And I buckled up my shoes, and then started walking, and I started walking. Oh, I started walking. I just buckled up my shoes.